Ultimately, Aaliyah contemplated what to do with these private quarters. The hallowed place reached beyond her own feelings of devotion for her brother. She felt the sacredness in the still shadows of the CH-like suite with its austere wall tapestries, the bed Paul and Chaney had shared, the jasmium spice coffee service that had once belonged to Jameis. After long deliberation, Aaliyah decided that she needed to share this place with others. But with whom? A place limited to herself and a few invited guests? Only those who had been close to Paul and to Chaney? What about a museum that only Fremen could visit? Or should it be something more accessible that drew pilgrims from all over the Imperium? Valifor's voice called to her from the other side of the closed door. Regent Aaliyah, your mother requests entrance. Aaliyah pushed past the wall hanging, opened the door, and saw her chief Amazon guard standing next to Jessica. Of course. Her mother entered, the first time she'd ever been inside these rooms. She said nothing about the crackdown, or Bronzo's writings, or any of their previous discussions as she walked around the chamber, sadly inspecting the extra still suits, the film books that Paul or Chaney had been reading, the holophotos. She wiped a finger across a tabletop, came away with a thin layer of dust. She took several deep, agitated breaths. This is not easy for you, is it, Mother? No. In the sleeping quarters, Jessica paused to look at a detached wooden headboard that featured carvings of a leaping fish and thick brown waves, a piece that had been salvaged from the original Arrakeen residence. That headboard had once concealed a hunter-seeker used in a Harkonnen attempt to kill Paul. Later, after becoming emperor, Paul had kept it as a reminder never to let down his guard. Moving on, Jessica paused to examine the contents of a table by a filter glass window, a pottery jar set all by itself as if in a place of special reverence. Her gaze flickered over to her daughter, asking an unspoken question. It's the jar Chaney sent me to fetch after Count Fenring stabbed Paul. It held the water of life that stopped his heartbeat long enough for us to control the bleeding. Jessica stared at the pottery. After what we observed in the bazaar the other day, it heartens me to see authentic objects here. I think I should collect a few keepsakes of my own. Aaliyah felt a rush of enthusiasm. Yes, Mother. After our conversation, I instituted a close watch on the black marketeers with their phony relics. The memory of Mordib should not be cheapened by counterfeits. She smiled, hoping her mother would approve. I have decided that the only way to prevent the fraud is to create a seal of approval, an official mark that reassures buyers, the faithful, that a particular object has been authenticated as the original. All additional profits shall go into the government treasury. Jessica's brow furrowed. But the demand will be far higher than the amount of items available. Yes, and since copies will be made anyway, we will manufacture our own replicas and sell them as such, blessed by the Kizaret. Official facsimiles rather than fakes. I'll be on a consulting board, and I'd like you to act in that capacity as well. Remember, I'm going back to Caladan soon. I've seen enough scraps of Paul's life. She took another long look around and then slowly left. Yes, I've seen enough. Afterward, Aaliyah lifted a seashell fragment from the table and held the broken piece up against the light from the window. It was an object from Mother Earth, if Whitmore Blood's story about it was true. He'd given it to Paul as a token of allegiance from Archduke Armand de Caz. But the seashell, like Blood's promise, was broken. She put the artifact back down in exactly the same position. Then, on impulse, she spun the piece around so that it faced the other way. making her own mark. These objects were not really sacred, though she would continue to act as if they were. They were just things. Is Agola capable of love? This was one of my questions at first, but not any longer. Duncan Idaho and I have an understanding. Aaliyah Atreides, Private Notes. Only hours before Aaliyah and Duncan's wedding would begin, three stern Amazon guards escorted Lady Jessica out to a place of honor at the edge of the desert beyond the citadel walls. Stilgar was her companion as they moved through the festive crowds, both dressed in formal robes for the joyous occasion. She had intentionally kept her distance from the Fremen leader since returning from the secret ceremony to honor Chaney. Keeping their silence, Jessica and the Naib took seats in the viewing stands overlooking the perfect expanse of desert. Hundreds of diligent workers had combed the dunes with fine rakes and used gentle blowers to erase footprints and remove any appearance of clutter. An extravagant and unnecessary waste of effort, Jessica thought, for the swift winds would erase any mark soon enough. As the crowds gathered, Stilgar mused, "I was the one who first told Usul that your daughter should be wedded. It was a thing any man could see at the time." He narrowed his eyes and gazed out at the dunes where the ceremony would take place. Jessica was glad to share her thoughts. "In some cultures, my daughter would be considered too young for marriage. But Aaliyah is unlike any other girl. In her memories, she can recall all the pleasures of the flesh, all the joys and obligations of marriage. Even so, it's always challenging for a mother to think of her daughter being married. It is a fundamental change in relationships, the crossing of a Rubicon." Stilgar raised his eyebrows. "Rubicon? The term is unfamiliar to me. A river on ancient Terra. A famous military leader crossed it and forever changed the course of history." The Fremen Naib turned away, muttering, "I know nothing of rivers." Princess Irulan arrived with Hera and the two children, attended by another cluster of guards. Gurney moved along the stands, ever suspicious and alert. Jessica understood his reasons for concern. By removing Izbar and the traitorous priests, they had eliminated one plot against Aaliyah, but that did not mean there weren't others waiting to be sprung. Aaliyah had mentioned her implementation of other unusual security measures, but Jessica did not know what her daughter had meant by that. Grand spectacles seemed to invite tragedy. Romber's death during the jongleur performance in the Theater of Shards, the slaughter during Duke Leto's wedding, the swarms of unleashed hunter-seekers during Muad'Dib's great surrender ceremony, even Brunso's recent disruption during Paul's funeral. From the stands, she glanced at the twins, aware that Leto and Ganima would spend their entire lives fearing an assassin's blade, a conspirator's explosion, a poisoner's special ingredient, or some weapon no one had yet contemplated. But a state wedding could not be held behind closed doors and drawn shutters. Duke Leto Atreides and the old duke before him had understood the power and necessity of diversions, of bravura. Bread and circuses, the ancient Romans had called it. Her heart went out to Aaliyah, wishing the young woman well on her wedding day. "She is my daughter," she whispered fiercely to herself. Jessica prayed that this ceremony, unlike those others, would take place without disruption or disaster, and that Aaliyah and Duncan could actually be happy together. It was time for that in the Atreides family.